What's up, Madrid podcast listeners or Real Champ podcast listeners? It's Mushtaq, the host of this podcast. I'm here with Hassan Karim at the Hassan Karim on Twitter. Follow him. He's a bit annoying, but he's a super guy. He's got some good tweets. Anyway, last time we guys, or Hassan and I, caught up on the podcast and spoke to the podcast, because we're not actually talking to you. It's kind of a weird thing. Was just before the second leg of the game against Girona in the Copa del Rey. Of course, Real Madrid won that game, but before we get into that and who Real Madrid will be facing off against in the semifinal, let's just take a look at that game as a whole, and maybe the whole performance over two legs, and pick one or two things that stood out to us, and one or two that we definitely need to improve upon or make sure we carry out through the semifinal. I'll let you go first.
So in terms of what impressed me in this game, I must admit the general structure of the team was quite impressive. We didn't have too many lapses in defence for a change, which was quite impressive. If I had to pick an individual that stood out, I know you're probably going to say Benzema, so I'm going to differentiate a little bit. and I'm going to say Vinicius Junior was quite impressive in this game. His general threat, his constant running. Could have had a couple of assists, more than he did. I'd say Vinicius Junior.
Well, there's definitely no arguing with that one. Like you said, I'm definitely going to go with Karim Benzema because he continues to impress. And not only is he impressing, he's doing so on a consistent basis. And that is something that he hasn't done in a while at Real Madrid. So it's super important. And of course, especially with the depth or the lack thereof of this team in terms of goal scorers, it's something that's so welcomed with a big hug. Because Real Madrid need that so badly, and they're going to continue to need it, especially as we now get into February, and it's that push in all the cups. I mean, it's always a contest, but I think February, March is kind of where things really get decided, especially the league. That's kind of all gets figured out, and then you'll know whether you're going to rise to the occasion or fall apart again. But anyway... Outside of Karim Benzema's performance, the one neat thing that did stick out to me was, of course, Marco Asensio getting some minutes. He's been injured for some time. I think he was out for like 6 weeks or something like that. It's super cool, and it's great to see the young kid back on the pitch. I'm just hoping that he can regain or at least gain Solari's trust. Not all over again, but now that he is back and he is fit. I did see someone tweet something quite interesting earlier today, and they basically said Marco Asensio is essentially a new signing for Solari because he hasn't really been fit enough long enough for Solari to use him. So it's kind of like having a new piece to this jigsaw puzzle that Solari has to work with. And at least the way I saw it, it's kind of true. So again, it's going to be interesting. Like you said earlier, of course, you have Vinicius who's playing super well. He's doing so good. I think he's exceeding the expectations of pretty much everybody.
I expected him to do well, but not this well.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. Even if you were optimistic about him, you were not this optimistic. Even I was not this grossly optimistic, and I'm the most blindly optimistic person possible. but seeing where he'll fit in, and of course, you know, Lucas Vasquez on the right has been doing so well. I think Solari's only lost two games when Lucas has played. So will he get a chance? Of course, up top, Benzema's in form. You wouldn't play Asensio up top anyway, so that doesn't make sense. But where will he fit in? I think it's going to be a big thing. But like I said, nice to have him back.
Yeah, for sure. This is the case. Does he use him correctly? I mean, I'm sick to death of seeing people use Asensio on the left wing. Stop it. Just stop it. Play him on the right, you know he's good there. Or play him as like a free-roaming attacking midfielder. Just stop playing him on the left for the love of human nature. Just stop playing him there.
Yeah, I feel like he does his best work when he does have a free role on the wing. In my eyes, at least, I don't really see the point of having him playing on the wings. People who should be playing on the wings are already playing on the wing, like Vasquez and Vinicius and Bale when he's fit, because they're people who have pace. Asensio, sure, he can make a sprint if there's a counterattack, or he can burst, you know, by himself if he goes free, if he gets a good ball. But it's not like he can give you, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 good runs up the wing over the course of 90 minutes. So, I mean, he could do it, but then you're going to have to sub him out at 70. So there's no point.
It's not out of the realms of possibility for him to do it, but just use him where he's strongest at the end of the day.
Exactly. I mean,
in his strongest season, obviously, which was the 17-18 season, he was at his best when Zidane allowed him just to sort of roam between the flanks and through the midfield. I mean, you've only got to look at his performances against Bayern Munich. How many times did he surge down the left? Not often, but how many times did he just surge down the middle, slicing Bayern open?
Yep.
Numerous times over.
I remember doing live tweets on the Real Champs account just of those games, of those Champions League games when Asensio would get the chance, or even La Liga games when Asensio got the chance, and he did get slotted on the left slash a free roam, but that link up between him and Marcelo, sure, that Marcelo isn't the same Marcelo we've been seeing lately, but that is, like, it's superb, like, the way they work together, the way they bounce off of one another, the quick one-twos, like, his interplay with the midfielders, like, it was great to see, but again, that's because that's what fits Marcos.
Yeah, definitely. He links up with Marcelo well. It's just, if you want to get the best out of him as a scoring threat, because, you know, let's not beat around the bush. His long-range shooting ability is ludicrous. You're not going to get the best out of that from the left.
Yeah, definitely.
You're only going to get the best out of him with that down the middle or off the right. That's the only place you're getting the best out of him, really.
Well, now that we all agree that we'd love... We both agree that we'd love to see Marco back, and he plays best in that free role or that roaming role. There's somebody else at Real Madrid who's had a free role and has been roaming quite a bit, and is one person that's concerned me over this Copa del Rey, especially because if there was any time that he was going to be brought into this squad, I really thought it was going to be during the Copa, but it still hasn't happened, and it's Isco. And I'm just like, why? Why not? It's not like he's done anything insane. It's not like he's gone and played any match where he's passed with less than 80% accuracy. He's been dispossessed 5 times. Like, there's nothing like that that's happened. I feel like at this point, there's no rationale as to why he isn't played.
No, I don't think there's any. Not that I could think of. I mean, you can't really make the argument he doesn't fit the system that Solari's implemented, because he's just as capable of playing the midfield role as Modric, Ceballos, and people like that. So it's not that. It can't be a fitness issue, because Pintus is now back in the squad, and when he's around, the fitness issues, they're not really an issue as such. So it's becoming a case of, now do we think it's a little beef between the two players? You know, has Isco done something, or... It's definitely a matter of something behind closed doors that we're just not aware of.
Well, do you think he'll get any appearances moving on to La Liga? Like, this upcoming match, I think we can kind of say we're good with talking about the Girona quarterfinal. But, like, let's try and just move into, you know, this weekend against Alaves. Like, it seems like it would be the time for Isco to play.
Of course, yeah, of course. I think it would be, but... It's well, the Solari does, and now this is where we'll really see. Obviously, without sort of spoiling what's going on in the next few weeks, but how vital the next few weeks are going to be. This is now where we'll really see whether it's an issue between the two, or whether it's just he can't slot him into the system, or what. I mean, he came up with an entirely. I mean, obviously, we all remember the Betis game where he came up with an entirely new formation, and it seemed just to not accommodate Isco. It was quite weird. So. Now we'll see, really, now, over these next few crunching weeks, on where Isco really stands with Solari.
Well, do you think he will... Well, in your eyes, what percentage do you think it is that he actually features this weekend?
I'll say about 40% that he features. It's just quite damning and low. But that's just me. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's, like... It's pathetic. I'm not saying what you think is pathetic. It's just pathetic that I actually it seems less than 50-50, which hurts, because there's no sense in having him just sitting on the bench. Like, and really, I don't understand what Solari's trying to do, if he's trying to appease Isco or the fans or Florentino Perez or who it is, by giving Isco a round or less than 20 minutes in a game. I don't know if that is supposed to be an audition for him and he's expecting him to do something great in those 20 minutes or something miraculous in those 20 minutes, or, you know, that's supposed to suffice for time. I mean, I don't see... I think I wrote that article, the question corner. He's had 24 appearances, of which 13 have been substituted.
Yeah, it's shocking. For the pitch.
So it's like more than half of the games that he's partaken in, he's been subbed on. I mean, bar Thibaut Courtois, of course, you're not going to count goalies in the starting 11, but like Isco is ranked, I think it was like 15th in minutes played. I'm not trying to discredit Danny Ceballos or Marcos Llorente. Sure, Llorente plays a different position, but like, just look at Ceballos. Like, why is there that need? And I think the biggest problem of all of this is going to be the next few weeks at Real Madrid, when you're going to be playing friggin' Barcelona, Atleti, Ajax, Barcelona again, then Barcelona. Like, the amount of strain that's going to take, not just in travel, but the simple fact of the teams that
you're playing, yeah.
It's going to be insane. If Solari really thinks he's going to put that burden on Modric and Cruz for all those games, it's just not going to happen. You're going to burn all over again.
Really see now with the state of that relationship. If he doesn't use Isco over the next few weeks, even though there's definitely a relationship issue and not just a tactical one.
It would only make sense to use Isco for these kinds of games because of the playing style of those teams. You need some, like, Barcelona doesn't play pace completely. Sure, they have fast people, but like, for them, it's just possession. If you're not going to play Isco, I guess you're just dumb. Sorry, Solari, you're a bit of an idiot.
No, it's fair comment. I agree with it. I mean, you can't take away the fact that Isco is a world-class player. You'd be stupid not to say so. I had an interesting debate with somebody on Twitter the other day. Obviously, I'm a massive advocate of James Rodriguez, always have been, always will be. But even though I said at the end of the day, even though I think Isco is a slightly more one-dimensional player, if you can build the system around him correctly, you will really reap rewards, as we saw in 2016-17 was down in the second half of the season when Isco was just out of this world in that team.
So I mean, that Isco was insane. Like, when he put on that purple jersey in the Champions League final, kid went off. Like,
don't get me wrong. Yeah. I think he certainly overachieved that season. I don't think he'd be able to replicate that season in a heartbeat.
He wouldn't.
A lot of players overachieved that season, but it shows he's got the ability, that's for sure. I mean, you see it for Spain as well.
Exactly.
So he's got the ability to be world class, and there's no doubt about it. It's just a case of Isco is definitely a systematic player. He's not someone you could just drop into, say, okay, say he wasn't a Real Madrid player, you couldn't just drop him into Eibar or, you know, anyone like that. You couldn't just drop him in there and he'd just do the job in that system straight away. Which is where maybe I can see the tactical issue, but I don't think it's a tactical issue anymore. Definitely don't think it's a tactical issue anymore. At first I did. Now I don't think it is. I think it's genuinely a case of Solari just playing. That doesn't seem to like the man.
By the way, for those of you who think we're brown-nosing right now, I promise you, we do understand that Isco has flaws, and plenty of them. As a huge Isco fan, I can definitely point them out for you. I think we've just rambled on about how upsetting it is to see him just sit there on the bench and just not be of any use, but we shall digress and move on. You actually got to watch the draw, or at least you were keeping up with it. Who were you hoping to get in the draw of the three teams that were remaining?
Anybody not named FC Barcelona, which is only two other people, really. But yeah, as soon as I saw Valencia came out, and then I saw Real Betis came out, I was like, fuck. Literally, I didn't even say anything else. I sat on the train watching this draw. As soon as I saw those two teams come out first, I was like, fuck.
Yeah, it's definitely not not the news that many Madrid fans wanted to hear. But then again, like, you just gotta be positive.
Go with it. At the end of the day, it goes back to the statement, doesn't it? Luck of the draw. And exactly. We just didn't have luck of the draw this time around. But at the end of the day, yeah, okay. I'm not particularly looking forward to those many Clásicos in such a short space of time, simply because it's going to destroy my nervous system. But yeah,
just
I welcome the challenge somewhere in my mind. The challenge is being welcomed, but yeah, it's going to be a challenging, very trying, testing few weeks. But this is where we'll really see the acid test on Solari, if you will. I mean, I still don't have the biggest amount of faith in the guy, and I don't think he's going to be at the club post summer of the season. But you know, if he wants to try and stake a claim to say that he should keep the job, God forbid he doesn't. Nothing against the guy, even if he does win something. This is his chance now. You've got your big, big window of opportunity to stake a claim to say, yes, I am the man for this job.
Do you think that this is going to be like the last straw all over again, kind of like what it was with Lopetegui? Like, he just absolutely bottled it in that Clásico, and then Papa Perez was like, all right, that's it, see you later. Do you think the same thing could happen, or is it just going to be a case of we just got to ride it out, pride over everything?
I think it's going to have to be a case of ride it out. I had this discussion on Twitter earlier.
We did talk about this before, actually, in one of the other pods.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, okay, so say he does absolutely terribly, say he gets battered by Barcelona, it's battered by Atletico Madrid, and goes out to Ajax in the Champions League. Okay,
that was literally the most depressing statement I've heard all week.
Good thing it's hypothetical, right? So, okay, that happens. You want to get rid of the man. Okay, fair enough. Who are you going to get in now? Think about it this way. A, who's a candidate that's available at this point in time? Who's logistically going to take that job at this point and the state of the team that's, you know, the state that this team is in right now? Who's going to logically take that? I mean, come on, you think about it. Any top-tier manager is going to turn around and be like, I'm not taking over that train wreck. You must be mad. I'm not risking my name and my status for that. No one's going to do that. They'll run away from it. Okay, yeah, you can be like, yeah, biggest club in the world, yada, yada, yada. But sometimes you have to run away from a train wreck like that, and that is literally running away from a train wreck, because say for argument's sake, Conte takes the job because we sack Solari and does an absolute sort of dreadful run because the team's just stinking until the summer. Get to the summer, Perez is like, well, this gamble didn't work. Yeah, we'll sack him as well. Imagine the shame of that. You only brought in essentially a caretaker, and you were just kicked out the door straight away because you weren't able to rescue what was already a foregone conclusion.
And I think what makes it even more of like a delicate situation is the fact that Solari played for Real Madrid as well, and he coached the Castilla side for 3 years. So it's almost like it's like a double disservice to
exactly
make him depart in such a fashion. It's almost insulting yourself. It's kind of like that don't bite from the hand that feeds you kind of thing. I mean, it's not the same principle, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah. But the other thing, when they appointed Solari, my biggest question was, what were they expecting when they made that appointment? Was this just a case of steady the ship, write the season off, and then we'll just get rid of him at the end? Or was this a case of like, okay, yeah, we reckon this guy can, you know, potentially do something? Like, what was the logistics behind the appointment?
I just don't see how Perez and Emilio and the rest of the board could really believe that Solari is a long-term solution.
Of course, like, yeah, I completely agree with that.
Despite giving that contract till 2021 or whatever it is, like, it feasibly does not make sense.
No, it doesn't. And at the end of the contract's just for formality, isn't it, really? Because you're not going to say to a guy, yeah, we'll just give you a contract to the end of the season. I mean, yeah, it does have to.
Months, don't worry.
But it's, you know, it's one of those. I mean, I personally think they should have just appointed him as caretaker, like similar to Manchester United with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and just said, yeah, well, he's a manager until the end of the season, and then we'll go from there.
I still can't pronounce the guy's name, by the way. Sorry.
Oh, I had to listen to it numerous times until I could figure it out. So I think I've got it down. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
I'm proud of you, kid. Proud of you.
Got it.
So all the pessimism aside, do you think there is an advantage that Real Madrid hold over Barcelona? That'll be, like, just for the Copas, not like putting aside the La Liga matches.
Realistically, like in the Copa del Rey, just in the cup game anyway, where it's knockout stage, anything is possible. That's the beauty of the game. Anything is possible at this point. Okay, yeah, you can account for form and you could say, yeah, well, this team's scoring this many goals and this team's had that start to the season. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, form goes out the window in those kind of games and it's literally just what happens on the day and you can never really predict it. And that's been epitomised by Real Madrid numerous times over the last couple of years, especially last season.
Real Madrid literally is a cup team, is what they are.
Yeah, I've always sort of, a couple of times I've used the analogy, they're kind of like the Italy of club football, where they're just very good in the cups, but that's the sort of usually how it goes. Not really made for a long, hard slog. But it's like, look at PSG last season. Remember when we drew PSG?
Oh, yeah.
I was dreading that because I was like, Jesus Christ, PSG.
Oh, my gosh. Mbappe. Like, we don't have the cool... It's not some super high-profile group chat that we have. I know I mentioned this a few times in the podcast, but if you could see the way Hassan panics and just rants in the group chat, all I just see is my iPhone just going... I'm dreading this. We're going to lose. We're going to get smacked. We're going to be thumped. This person's going to play like crap. This person won't show up. The tactics are going to be shit. Like,
that's the moment.
Literally. Yeah. The exact opposite of what I am. That's Hassan before a big game.
Basically. Yeah. I'm a bucket of nerves.
Yeah. But pulled it off superbly in the end.
Yeah. That's thanks to a certain Portuguese. We are missing this season, but we've got Big Ben's hashtag Big Ben's for Ballon d'Or 2020. It's coming.
Wait, just a quick side note. Karim Benzema has more than who is it? Firmino, Lukaku, and Suarez this season.
Not just that. Sergio Ramos has more than Lukaku.
Benzema has more goals than Griezmann as well.
He does, yeah, but that makes me happy because it's a big middle thing because Didier Deschamps.
Gonzalo Higuain, like, this is pathetic.
Yeah, it's pretty jokes, to be honest, but it's like, yeah, the only reason I like the fact that he's got more goals than Antoine Griezmann is A, because he plays for Atletico and I hate them. I hate Griezmann as a not as a player, as a person, I just hate Griezmann, I find him cringy. And it's kind of like a middle finger to Deschamps because, like, you've made this guy kind of like the boy of your team.
Oh, for
alongside
sure.
Mbappe, and you've just been ignoring Benzema for so many years.
That's gonna look, and, I mean, like, granted, they've won a World Cup now, so it's not like you can really take the piss out of them, but it's so nice.
But just imagine what Benzema would have done in that team over Olivier Giroud.
Oh, man. Like, don't get me wrong, I still kind of rate what Giroud did, but then if Benz was there, oh, baby, it would have been sweet.
He would have at least got a shot on target in the tournament, put it that way.
It would have been like a fresh French baguette, nice and crisp on the outside and soft and warm on the inside. Ooh, baby, it would have been amazing.
Toasted with cheese.
Yeah, toasty. Cheese toasties. I don't know if you guys know this, but, like, I don't know where you are in the world. I think we've said this before. Like, can you please just, like, add us on Twitter? And just tell us where you live. Because, like, we kind of want to know where our listeners are from. Because, like, it'd be interesting to see on Twitter. Like, we can see, like, Twitter stats and all that. But the podcast obviously doesn't allow us to do that. But, like, just add us. Just your country. You don't even have to put, like, a long tweet. We'll know what you're talking about. But in England, they call cheese toasties what we call here in North America grilled cheese. Which is kind of... It kind of makes more sense, but it's also kind of funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting difference. I always used to wonder, what the hell do they mean, grilled cheese?
Nobody got on the cereal thing, eh?
Yeah, no, that upset me, guys. What you let us down. What are you doing?
Seriously.
Tell me your favorite cereal.
Oh, my God. Research purposes. Let's put a poll on Twitter right now. Cheese toasties or grilled cheese.
All right, fine. We'll do it.
I'll do it right now while we're doing this. So I'll be just... So you keep talking.
But yeah, man, it's strange how you get these differences between the two countries. What else do you? It's like you'll call things like sidewalk and stuff like that, whereas we call it a path.
Or I pavement. Actually call it a path.
So now you've got English relatives, haven't you? So.
Well, no, it's not because of the English relatives. It's really because of my mom, like, growing up in, like, a British education system. Hashtag colonialism. Yeah. So that's basically... Sorry.
It's like, in a car, for example, you'll call an accelerator the gas pedal.
That's true. And also, like, we call it gas. Like, I'm going to go fuel my car with gas, which doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, we're like, no, we're going to put some petrol in.
Yeah. And then, interesting, you know what my favorite one is how you guys don't say GPS and you say sat-nav. It just sounds so much more, like, intricate, you know? Like, ooh, a sat-nav. Like, it really sci-fi. Seems like you're going... Yeah, like you're really doing shit, you know? And then what's the other one? Can't even think of it. No, it was so funny. Oh, I don't know if you say this, but I've heard some people say aircon for air conditioning. Whereas, like, here we're just super lazy. We're just like AC, just crank up the AC. It's
yeah, hot. I've never myself said AC. I've heard people say it, but like, you just call aircon. It aircon or air conditioning.
Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, back to the game. The one advantage that I think Real Madrid have over Barcelona is like. Kind of like what you said, just like this weird innate ability to just be like, oh, this game's important. We should win. And then just like flip the switch and just
switch it on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Just like absolutely boss it. Like midfield, Toni Kroos, Luka Modric pass for like freaking 95% accuracy. Benzema has like 5 shots, 3 are on target. Danny Carvajal flies up the wing, puts like 5 crosses in the box. 3 meet somebody's head, 1 actually ends up on target. Like, just some, like, ludicrous stats like that. Like, it's one of those days where I go on Who Scored and I look at the stat sheet and I'm just like, wow, what shouldn't I mention? Because...
Yeah, it is one of those.
I'm not trying to jinx it. It's just... I feel like it's just a Real Madrid thing.
No, it is. I mean, any tournament besides La Liga, this team just seems to step up if it's a cup competition, whether it's the Copa del Rey. Oh, okay, maybe the last few seasons we haven't, but... You know, when we face big sides in the Copa del Rey, generally they step up. I mean, Champions League, you don't really need to say anymore. And like, obviously the Super Cup up until this year, they always just seem to boss it even in second gear. Like, I remember we played Manchester United in the Super Cup a couple of seasons ago, and like, I was thinking United actually might make it tricky, and we just made it look like a walkover.
I mean, it was just a 1-0 game, though.
Yeah, but the performance from Madrid was really quite surprising, and just how like controlled them. They just literally could just control them. I was like, that's really surprising.
Literally, how easy they made that look. All I want to happen is like that Super Copa, like no, what was it? Spanish Super Cup, like performance over 2 legs against Barca. Just like replicate that. I'll be so happy.
There you go. There's another one. Spanish Super Cup, obviously against Barcelona. They just. Really love went into another gear. It was ridiculous.
I'm really curious, like, what tactics Solari is gonna implement. Like, is he gonna go back and look at the tape of that game with all the other guys on the management and just say, like, you know, what can we take from that and replicate or at least try and emulate in terms of form, structure, tactics, and then figure out the personnel? Like, how are they gonna go about? I really wish I could be a fly on the wall in that coaching room.
There is the other thing. There's obviously some different roster changes now as well. I mean, you've got Arthur in the midfield now for Barcelona, who's, not going to lie, smashing it. Incredible player. You've got Philippe Coutinho now, Ousmane Dembele. Oh, I don't know why I'm saying it, but Kevin Prince, Boateng, Vidal. You've got all these new players in there just showing
all
up.
All these weird people showing up.
Yeah, these just weird people, like weird flex, but okay. Yes, it's like just these new faces. Obviously, before, you know, you had your prototypical, your Neymar, Messi, Suarez, and Iniesta, and people. Obviously, you know, the two of them have departed now. But yeah, man, you just had those players then. So it'd be interesting to see how they adapt to these new faces.
I don't like Now that you mention all that, that really just like sunk my hype. Like, it felt really like attainable, and then he just threw out all these names. I think the one person I'm scared of more than Messi is Dembele. I'm just like, shit.
Dembele is frightening. He's so good.
That kid's a nut.
He's a freak. He's actually a straight freak. After Mbappe, I'd say he's probably the best young player in the world, quite easily. He's ambidextrous. He's quick. He can racket a shot from anywhere. It's just there seems to be nothing the kid can't do, and he's clutch as hell. I think for Barcelona this season, he's won the most points.
Yeah, I don't know. On the plus side of things, I'm just looking at the stats of the Copa del Rey this season. Real Madrid have Karim Benzema, who is a top scorer in the competition with 4 goals, tied for third. And then also, Real Madrid have first and second in assists. So Vinicius Jr. has the most with 6. And then Yathola has second most with 4 assists. So, like, individually, good stats. But again, it's just going to come down to piecing it all together at the end of the day as a team and just getting the job done. I'm super nervous. I'm super scared. We're so nervous, we didn't even cover the LFS game, which is happening in 2 days. But we kind of did in the last podcast. I think, what did we say? The tricky thing is like where they sit in the league table.
Alaves are a bit of like they're like a double bluff. They look like they're conceding a lot.
Like a dark horse kind of thing. Like you're not really sure.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It really is a strange because they sit fifth in the table.
Yeah.
They've got a -2 goal difference.
I was just going to say that.
But that we still conceded more goals than they have. Okay, it's only 2 more. But you know what I mean?
No, I definitely see what you're saying. But again, like it's kind of it's scary that you can have a minus goal difference and still be that high up the table.
Yeah, it's like I said to you that day. Like they're overachieving on their goal difference and stuff, and they're overachieving on their goals conceded, even though they got a negative goal difference. So it's weird. It's very weird.
I know it sounds super cliche, but coming out strong is just gonna be like the most important thing. Like really, from here on out. Like, essentially for every game, but, like, now more than ever, because there really is no time to screw around and wait till the 80th minute to be like, oh,
maybe time to switch on.
Yeah, let's do something now. Like, I don't remember what game it was. A few matches ago, like, Vinicius Jr. is, like, our highlight player because he's the only one doing something. And, like, don't get me wrong, I'm so happy that he is, but it's also slightly pathetic.
Yeah, it's worrying at times. It's just like the team's just not switching into gear. It's just like, oh, what are we going to do when we come up against, a big side, a big outlet in Europe or in the league? And it's just like, yeah, we might just get pumped. But again, maybe they'll rise to that occasion. Just the main thing with Alaves is just not to be complacent. Complacency will be the undoing of this team, and it always is. It's like they're walking, they're like, yeah, we're Real Madrid. We're just going to win because we've automatically got that big name.
I think that's going to hold true this week and more so against Ajax in the Champions League.
Yeah, again, especially against Ajax. We cannot afford to go into that game and be like, well, fine, we'll pump these guys 6-2, so we'll do the same. They've got dangerous players, some very dangerous players in that team.
Dangerous players, a lot of things for Real Madrid to pay attention to. The schedule is going to be absolutely nuts. Hassan and I are going to try and keep up with it as much as we humanly possibly can as students, as well as writers or podcasters or however you see us. Just going to jump through the schedule before we end this podcast. This Sunday is going to be match day 22 of La Liga against Alaves. On Wednesday, February 6th, will be the first leg of the Copa, which will take place at Real Madrid. 3 days later, on the Saturday, Real Madrid will host Atletico Madrid. And then 4 days later, on February 13th, Real Madrid will host Ajax. Thankfully, everybody's coming home to us for those games. We don't have to travel. 4 days after that, on February 17th, Real Madrid will visit Girona again. Of course, this time it'll be in La Liga. Then we will have a week's rest, thankfully, possibly. On February 24th, we'll host Levante, and then 3 days later, will be the second leg of the Copa match against Barcelona, where we will travel to the Camp Nou. And then I don't know if Madrid will stay in Barcelona. They'll probably come back because a few days after that, they're going to be playing, or a week. I guess they'll come back home. A week after that, they'll travel back to Barcelona to play Barca at the Camp Nou on March 2nd. So in a space of a month, Real Madrid will play the first leg of their round of 16 in the Champions League. They will play both legs of their Copa against Barcelona. There will be a Madrid derby as well as a third Clásico, which will be the second Clásico and final Clásico of the La Liga season. Oh, and then, sorry, 3 days after that, Madrid play the return leg against Ajax. So there you have it.
A lot going on.
You make sure to watch Real Madrid. Sorry, say that again.
There's a lot going on, man. A lot going on.
Yeah, if there is a time that you don't want to miss Real Madrid games this season, this is going to be the month. Like, watch it in class. Don't skip class. We're not saying that. Watch in class. Watch at work. Do whatever you need to do because it's going to be absolutely epic. We're going to try really hard to keep up this consistency with the podcast. And also, Hassan and I looked at the numbers. We don't want to throw them out there because that's just kind of weird, but we were joyfully surprised, I would say is the correct term. Like, we honestly really appreciate you guys having a listen, downloading this podcast, and having a listen to it on your free time or whenever you can. We just ask that maybe you share it with one person if you so wish. We would super, super really appreciate it if you did. Hassan, any other closing remarks? We're good?
No, we're all good.
We're solid. Thank you guys so much. We'll try and hit you guys up with another podcast after the Sunday match against Alaves. Enjoy your weekend, or if you have work, catch up on your schoolwork, whatever it is you got to do. Enjoy it. Have fun. See you Sunday on Twitter. And as always, Hala Madrid.